Good morning, Brew Daily Show. I'm Neil Fryman.
And I'm Toby Howell.
Today, we have a very special guest, 3-time Olympic gold medalist, Sean White.
We'll be talking to Sean about his new apparel brand launching on Shopify, what a gold medal actually tastes like, and some new trick ideas I had for him. It's Tuesday, December 26th. Let's ride.
This is definitely one of the most surreal episodes we've released, and one that I think you'll really enjoy because Sean White is one of those people who excels at everything he touches.
I'm sure a lot of people at home have such a distinct memory of watching the Olympics and wondering, all right, what is it that makes this guy so much better than everyone? And legitimately, the first jump he did made me do a double take. The dude could fly.
But what I love about Sean is that he is still getting after it to this day. He's replaced the half pipe with this new business of his that you will hear about on the show. The man never stops doing flips.
I cannot wait to get into it, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. We have our first gold medalist on the show today, so it's only fitting that it's sponsored by Yahoo Finance.
Okay, how are those two things related?
Well, speaking of gold, Yahoo Finance is also the number one finance platform on the internet, trusted by over 150 million visitors globally each month.
That might be the first time Sean White has ever been compared to Yahoo Finance, but I'll allow it. Head to finance.yahoo.com today to see what the heck Toby is talking about, or download the Yahoo Finance mobile app to get it directly on your phone. Now to our interview with Sean White.
Sean, thanks so much for hopping on the pod. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're entering a new chapter of your life as a business owner, but also as the ideal customer of your new product, White Space. How has that influenced kind of the development of White Space? I'd imagine you're very hands-on in kind of the development of a lot of the products that you're selling.
Yeah, well, that's the best part. You know, honestly, I've been sponsored by so many brands since I was a kid. And, you know, not only was it a great learning curve, but like you notice along the way that when you join these companies, they already have this mold that's built. They already have like, this is our logo. This is our slogan. These are the colors we use. This is the message. This is everything. And it's my job to best kind of like support and promote what they're doing, but try to be myself as well, you know, so fit that mold, but then try to be me in the middle of it. So I don't kind of alienate or have fans of mine think, oh, he's changed because he's now with this sponsor, something like that, you know? So it's gotta be like authentic to me. But when you start your own company, I mean, you're really creating that mold, like, oh, this is what we're about. This is what the meaning behind the brand is. This is what we're going for. And that kind of sends you down these different roads and paths. And so for me, it's been really fun to, you know, figure out what that mold is and then like, you know, get the feedback from the customers and different things and just kind of build from there. It's like this amazing sort of competitive thing that's not my traditional way of competing, you know, but just like trying to make things better every time. But yeah, that's the fun part. I feel very qualified to, you know, go test the products, build the best boards, the best, you know, outerwear, make these things so user-friendly. And then my brother, who we, you know, worked with, you know, we worked together for years and years with different brands, came together to do this company. So it's been really fun working with him. And he's always been like this incredibly creative personality growing up. And so I'm more the the hands-on, you know, working on it and developing all this stuff. And then he's more of the, you know, helping me kind of get the fashion element and the kind of message and the, you know, the Pantone book with the colors in it. I mean, everything. We sit there and go through everything. So that's what you get, you know, when you end up buying the products. It's exactly what I'm using, which is pretty fun. I don't think there's many companies that do that. You know, I don't know if you get the same car, the race drivers using, you know what I mean? Or whatever, maybe tennis rackets, maybe you get the same racket, but I don't, you know, it's a rarity to go, you know, get the same thing that someone's using.
You are no doubt the most qualified person in the space to make something like this. What about the I don't want to say less fun, but more of the businessy side of things. How has it been kind of, you know, setting up the trademarks, migrating over to Shopify? I know you recently did that. Mm-hmm. The more in the weeds stuff, has that been something that you've picked up on really quickly, or has that been more of a learning curve for you?
Well, it's both. I mean, I definitely, I have help in that department. I have a good friend of mine who, it's so funny. We became friends when we were probably 8 years old. His mom worked the check-in counter of the snowboard contest I used to go to. And my mom was checking me in and she's like, oh, my son's got red hair too. You guys should hang out.
So, classic mom move.
Yeah, classic. You know, but I went down, obviously, my road of athletics and sports and stuff. And he had the different sort of, you know, finances and business development path. And so we kind of came together in a really fun way. And so he's been helping me in that department, guiding me. But, you know, yeah, trademarks are always difficult. You never know where and who's using what, and the rules are different in different countries. So you have to kind of, you know, either play nice with somebody, or if it's too similar to, you know, it's really difficult to do that. But I would say switching to Shopify was probably one of the easier decisions, you know, for us. You know, they have some of the biggest businesses in the world using their platform. You know, we want to be competitive. We want to be doing what, you know, solid, solidified companies that know exactly what they're doing, have been doing it for so long, are continuing to do. And it's just funny, I think, that Shopify started as a snowboarding company. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, we're going to bring that up.
People listening know that, but the creator of Shopify was like, man, I really want to sell these snowboards. And there was no real, you know, great way to do that. And so he created the software or the platform of Shopify, and then went, wait a minute, maybe this thing's not so much a snowboard brand, but maybe there's something in this platform that I've built, which is pretty awesome. So, you know, we've talked to the team over there, and they've been really supportive. And we've done some collaborations with the brand Whitespace. And so, yeah, it's been really fun to like, have full circle on that, come back to making snowboards again with those guys.
So you famously signed a sponsorship deal with Burton when you were just 7 years old. How did that experience inform the way you're thinking about signing young athletes now that you're on the other side as the sponsor?
Oh, it's a trip. It's so weird. I would say more just that, like, you know, it's an individual sport, snowboarding, and it was always very focused on like my goals and my next step and what, you know, competitions and my tricks and my training and me. And now to kind of put that side of life, you know, on the back burner and be able to, you know, sponsor young up and coming riders. It's amazing. I'm checking in on the Instagram, like, oh, they got the 360 down. Like, I'm like such a proud dad. Like, it's been awesome, and it feels so good to see the products out in, you know, the wild, I guess you could say, you know, changing the way people ride, and that's kind of the goal. And so when I can support like a young up and coming rider, it's really fun for me on many levels. Obviously, it's great for the business to have the product out in the market and getting the feedback from real riders that are out there, because I can't ride the youth boards, obviously. But, you know, getting that feedback and supporting their careers. Because when I was sponsored at 7, I mean, it wasn't that I was the best rider out there. I just happened to kind of right place, right time. They didn't make kids boards, and they sent me one like, hey, you know, test this out, let us know what you think, maybe you should enter some competitions. And that really, like, you know, springboard my career. And obviously snowboarding is a pretty expensive sport. So, you know, family of five, you know, we'd load up in the van, having, you know, free board and maybe some travel money was, it meant the world to us. So.
Do you think these 12-year-olds are hesitant or a little intimidated to give you feedback on your product?
I don't think so. I mean, it's cool. It's like, I want to hear it. Give me the scoop. I mean, it's fun. And, you know, there's just that common, I think, respect among athletes, any athlete in general, but I think it's more, a fun thing that I can now like go meet up and ride with these athletes, or like, you know, support their career from afar, you know, some way. But yeah, it's definitely given new meaning to my new sort of you know, my new life's goals. It's so bizarre. Obviously, this string of competitive snowboarding has like been the common, you know, thing that's carried me through life for a long, long time. And so now that that's kind of set aside, this new thing's developing. It's really fun to see.
And speaking of you as the proud dad, you recently are involved in a youth camp up in Oregon. Would love to hear more about what you're up to there.
Yeah, man, I'm so excited about this. We closed a deal recently with an amazing group of investors and a guy named David Blitzer, who's just incredible. But we're investing in the youth camp space. You know, we want the next generation to have the best facilities, the best experience, the best products. And it really aligns with what I want to do with White Space and what I think snowboarding needs right now. And skateboarding in these sports. So I'm thrilled. The camp is up in Oregon. It's where I used to go as a kid. I mean, if you watch, I have a documentary that came out on Max, and there's a clip in there where my dad's talking about this camp that we would go to when I was a little kid. And he's like, man, he would just snowboard all day. He would skateboard all afternoon, and he'd just fall asleep in my arms. He's like, I think it was the best time in his life, you know, and it really was. It was this thing. I just loved being there. And so to have that full circle come back and be a part of this camp that's up there is just so amazing. And it gives me like this excitement to go there personally. So we can give you more information about it if you have some young ones that want to come up and ride the new facility and with me. It's going to be incredible, but yeah, that's one big step in the right direction for, I think, myself and where the brand's headed.
So speaking of kind of that younger generation, you didn't really grow up in kind of the social media age or the TikTok age and some of the internet hype that 1000% would have gone your way, probably didn't go your way because it just wasn't around. Are you almost grateful for that in a sense, or do you ever think, damn, it would have made life so much easier if there was a bunch of kids with iPhones filming everything you did kind of as you were starting out in your career?
I don't know. I mean, what happened. So it's hard to think any differently, but I don't know. I loved this thing. You know, when I was growing up, they had these VHS tapes that would come out. There were these snowboarding videos and everybody would wait, and this coveted tape that, you know, this movie that would come out, and people just waited and then watched them religiously and try to find the songs that are playing during the parts and this favorite athlete. And if you were toward the end of the movie, that meant, you know, you had a, you know, bigger part, or you had, you know, the more important writers, I guess you could say, were toward the end, the closers of the video. And it was this coveted thing. So I definitely think that having social media destroyed that a bit, just because now you're posting the clips, you know, real time. But I think it's fun to be able to be involved with, you know, people that you're interested in, friends, family, you know, or celebrity types, anybody that you're like, God, I want to know what they're up to. And you get these quick updates of what's going on. So it definitely changed it in a way. I wouldn't say for better or worse. It's just, it is what it is. But I remember when social media was happening, and it was a really bizarre thing, because I was just like, I don't understand it. Like, I just thought it was like another type of YouTube where you're supposed to just post like crash videos or like ridiculous things you saw. So for the first few years that I was on social media, that's all I posted, was just like videos of dogs falling off, whatever it was, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, really lame stuff, because I didn't get it. And then I finally went, oh, okay, I understand. It's a platform that you can kind of like keep people updated on current events, all these things. And anyways, but yeah, I missed the mark a bit, I think, when that all came through. But nowadays, yeah, I'd say for me, it's like a double-edged sword. Like, I really love it when I want to get a message out there, but I'm definitely not, you kind of have to tailor what you're putting out. Do you know what I mean? You can't just blast stuff. And then some stuff that I do is just super boring. And they're like, just post what you've been up to. And I'm like, dude, I've been like gardening. And I've been like straight, I come home and I'm like, oh,
well, I
hedges need trimming. The hedges need to be you know? And
so, people farming and gardening is some of the most popular TikTok content out there, so I wouldn't write it off.
I have to ask you about some of the stuff you put out on social media, because what I recently came across one of your videos, and it was literally just you eating while watching someone doing an extreme sport. I think they were snowboarding over desert dunes. And you have a few of these videos that go insanely viral, and it's literally just you sitting, eating something and watching. How did that come about? Because there's some of your most viral videos.
Yeah. So I think what happened was my social media, you know, I guess a manager. I don't know. He's just like my friend that helps me shoot while we're out. And he's like, you got to get on TikTok, this new thing, TikTok. And I was like, okay. And he's like, just duet this video. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, it'll just split screen. You'll do the video, just talk about what's happening. And it was basically a guy that was hiking in the back country in Colorado and came upon the area where I built my like private half pipe. And anyway, so I'm like, all right, well, I don't have time. Like I was eating cereal. I was like eating my breakfast. I was like, I'm just going to eat in the video. This thing like took off of just me just eating like, and then he kept doing it during breakfast or lunch or whatever. And so now I just like eat in these videos. And now people are like, oh, what's he eating? Oh, that looks pretty good.
That's goals.
A bad gig though. It's
seems pretty easy. I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
I probably have to win a few gold medals first. So we're approaching the new year as we talk, and a lot of our listeners are probably thinking about their New Year's resolutions. And from what I've read, you have this unique goal setting process. Would love to hear about that and how you set goals.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, for me, I've always found that, you know, goal setting's incredible. It's something that just like, you know, if you're running, it's hard. If you have no finish line, you got to get somewhere. And I feel like putting something out there in the distance really helps me, you know, kind of make the most out of my year and my focus and everything. And obviously like a big one, normally like for example, a season would be like, okay, I want to win the Olympics. That's a huge goal. That's a huge thing to take on. But then I would have all these little goals along the way that either had, you know, kind of something to do with the bigger goal. You know, when I was younger, it was all about like winning cars because I was about to get my license and they were offering cars. Can you believe it? They're offering cars at these competitions. So I'm probably like 14 or 15. I'm like, I got to win these cars. And so my whole season became about trying to enter any competition that was involved with like that had like a car sponsor. So trying to win the cars, you know, it's a fun sort of thing. And that was kind of in line with, you know, like obviously winning that event would then put me in a better position to do well at the Olympics. So it was all kind of like these little things to get to the bigger goal. I think the thing about it is that you really have to know what you want out the gate, because I think a lot of people tend to tell themselves something different than what they really feel inside. And that's a hard one. So take your time before you set that goal and really go like, this is what I want. And is this something that's disguised as something else? Or is this truly what you want? Because along the road, you're going to get challenged. Like things will happen, you know, and things won't go your way. And that sort of like inner, you know, promise you've made yourself of this is what we're doing can get, you know, tested by people around you, by, you know, circumstances. And if you really know what you want, then it's easy to kind of like push that aside and keep going. So it's been something that's like served me really well over the years. It's definitely not, it's easier said than done.
Yeah, I think oftentimes most people struggle with what they should be striving for, or what type of goal they should be set, than actually achieving that goal. And so for you, you know, professional snowboarder, it was relatively easy to figure out what you wanted to achieve. But I think for the vast majority of us, we're like, well, I'm supposed to set goals now. I can set a very ambitious goal, but I kind of have no idea what I want to achieve because I'm just living a regular life. So
yeah, but it doesn't have to be like a bummer. I mean, everybody, I'm like, this is the, you know, like I hear people all the time, like I got to do this. And I'm like, dude, listen to what you're saying. I'm like, it can be fun. Like it can, like even going to the gym can be fun. If you make a bet with a friend or something on the line, you're buying coffee today. If this happens, like I would do those kind of jokes and bets all the time to just keep it fun. Because if you're having fun doing something that's like a serious thing or whatever, like that's, it just helps it so much more. It's just like, you know, even if you have a simple bet with your buddy when you're watching the game, it makes the game so much more enjoyable to be there watching. So I tell people to kind of like have fun, like find a way to make something that's usually not enjoyable really fun. And then you're off to the races.
I actually do want to ask you about some of the success you've had. So there's this famous study from the 1992 Olympics, which found bronze medalists were actually happier with their hardware than silver medalists were. And you have obviously won a lot of gold medals, but you've also won a few bronze and silver in the X Games and various mm-hmm. things. Does that track with your experience? Were you ever happier with a bronze medal than with a silver medal, being the first loser?
I kind of get that, honestly, just because something about second place is really hard to swallow sometimes, just because you're like, God, I was so close. I could have done this, or I should have done whatever, you know, it kind of like eats away at you. And, you know, especially like in a judged event, like snowboarding, you know, it's like they didn't like my grabs. What was it? My pants were too tight. Was it the style? Like, what was it that didn't push me over the edge? And so, you know, at least in third, you're kind of like, I hit it, you know, and potentially people could be like, he was robbed of that glory. He should have gotten silver at least. I don't know. I think that's just the thought process behind it. But I would say that it's a difficult thing to actually win as well, because what's left after you win is just this sort of like, well, I did it, what now? Where at least in silver or bronze, you can be like, all right, next year, next time, like this is what's going to happen. You have a fire burning, you have a purpose and a passion, and you've tasted it, but it wasn't what you wanted. Now you go back, where if you win, you're just like, okay, I did it.
I'd love to
do it again. No, I know. Trust me. It's an incredible feeling, but it's also, like you said in the question, it's kind of this fleeting sort of, well, what's next sort of feeling. And then the expectation comes because you're the champion. It's like, okay, well, you're expected to win, deliver. It's like a comedian walking out like, all right, make me laugh. Let's go. You know, it's hard. But yeah, I guess that would be my only, I don't know, 2 cents on that sort of question.
Repeating as a champion is so hard to do, you know, in any sport. Just to have that drive and that discipline to go out there again a year after you conquered the world, and you're like, all right, well, mm-hmm. how do I get the motivation to do that again? So people like Djokovic and you and other mm-hmm. other athletes that are perennial winners is just pretty impressive.
I do actually want to know what does a gold medal taste like? You know how you always bite it after the end of an Olympics? Does it taste metallic? Oh,
sweet. Sweet honey.
sweet victory.
Sweet victory is what it tastes like.
More with Sean White after this break. Halfpipe walls were 11.5 feet tall when the event debuted in Nagano, and now, if I'm correct, they're 22 feet tall, so they've almost doubled. How high is a halfpipe wall going to get?
I mean, I could see it getting a little bit bigger. I just think with the speed that we're taking now and the tricks we're doing, I mean, it's bumped up to triples. If we're ever going to see a quad or something like that, I think the walls might need to get a little bit bigger, or at least the half pipes need to get steeper. You know, because when you do your air, you know, the half pipe wall is kind of falling away from you as the mountain drops. So not only are you going up in the air, but the mountain's falling away from you. And I know a lot of folks out there might think like, okay, bigger means, you know, more airtime and more speed, and that equals danger. But I kind of see it in the opposite, not the opposite complete way. Definitely those are factors that can be more dangerous or add a level of danger to the sport. But I always explain it like if you had an airplane and you're trying to land it on a small runway, it's pretty intimidating. The room for error, the margin for error is very small. And so when you have a bigger half pipe wall, picture it being a bigger runway to land on. Yes, you're going higher, you're going faster, all these things, but you have more time in the air and more runway to land on, which is really nice. I mean, I remember hitting the half pipe walls and just missing the wall completely and just landing on the bottom, blowing my, well, luckily I was a kid, so I just explode and then just get back up and keep going, go get all my stuff as my goggles flew everywhere. But that's how I look at it nowadays. And like we talked about camps and things like that earlier, you know, we're building these facilities that have airbags and foam pits and this technology that helps people try tricks in a safe environment, you know, which is, I think, a really awesome tool to get somebody. It's like, I mean, we talked about airplanes. It's the flight simulator before you fly the actual plane. It's something that can get you acquainted with what's happening before you actually do it in the real setting, where there are consequences. So, you know, it's crazy to see, but yeah, I don't know. I bet I could see them getting a little bit bigger, but I'll definitely be in the booth going like, wow, those half pipes got big. You know what I mean? So
not out there.
I won't be up there stressing like, oh my God.
So you're probably best known for the double McTwist 1260, which is 3.5 twists and 2 flips, which is just mind boggling to wrap my head around. So to kind of wrap up the show, I want to run some new trick ideas by you. So you just tell me what you think about these. These are trick names. Okay. So this one is called the New York Times Crossword 720. It's a trick that's supposed to be 3 spins, but 2/3 of the way through, you kind of just give up on it.
And you just get a coffee or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Midway
exactly.
through, you're like, you know what? Forget about it.
I think I'm done with that.
That is the nerdiest.
I'm into it.
He's into it. Look at it. And Sean could definitely
At
pull
this
it
point
off.
In my career, yes. Yes. Halfway through, just like, let someone else do it.
I actually do want to ask you, though, how do you end up naming your tricks? Do you kind of develop the trick and then you're like, all right, we got to name this? Or is it something where you start naming it and then you start trying to pull it off at the same time? How does the naming work?
Yeah, I think there's like a technical name. So double McTwist. McTwist is a McTwist is a skateboarding trick named after a guy named Mike McGill. The Mick and Mick's Twist. And so that happened. And then when we started snowboarding, it was similar to skateboarding. And a lot of the skateboarders were snowboarding. So they kind of like stole the trick names from skateboarding. So we're like, oh, it's a McTwist, but it's a double. So it's the same trick 2 times over. And then the numbers are just degrees of rotation. So, you know, 180 is half a circle, 360, 540, 720, 900, 1080. It's not as sexy when you break it down like that. Yeah. It's way more fun to be like the double McTwist. Wow. Yeah. Can I order that at McDonald's? But they're all broken down like that. And then you could give it a nickname. Like everybody, I was calling that one the Tomahawk or something. And so people are like, oh, the Tomahawk, you know, it's like you can give it a little name if you invent it.
Yeah, I heard a rumor that you wanted to call it the Tomahawk because you had a giant tomahawk steak kind of like the night before you did. Is that a true story?
Literally.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
Love that.
I was like, they're like, do you want the tomahawk steak? I was like, yeah. And then my coach was joking. He's like, it was the tomahawk you ate. I was like, it must have been all that meat. I was like, okay.
I love it.
But yeah, I know like Tony Hawk named a trick after he's like, none of these, you know, I think he was naming tricks, but none of them were sticking. And he was like, I need somebody like incredibly famous so it just catches on. So he named a trick the Madonna after Madonna. And it just was like, oh, and now the Madonna, the front side Madonna. It just took. So the steak wasn't as famous as Madonna is the issue, guys.
I think if you named a trick after Donald Trump, snowboarding popularity would go nuts.
The Dua Lipa,
The Donald Trump 220, 2260, yeah. I don't know. I was wondering how high can you count up in 180 degree intervals?
Oh God. I mean, pretty high. Who is it? He just did a 1260, I want to say. Or no, he 18. What was it? What did he do? I'll post about it later, but yeah, there's an Italian snowboarder that just set the record for hot biggest spin. I can't even add it up. It was that much. And I was watching it, trying to count it, slowing it down. Like, did it really? but it's wild to see where the sport's going. I mean, it's definitely like you think there's a limit and it just keeps pushing past that, which is pretty fun. And I think it's so special about the sport of snowboarding that like you can kind of invent something and be the best. There's only so many things, you know, or I guess ways to run a play or throw a ball or kick a ball, you know, traditional sports, but snowboarding and some other sports, it's really just like your creativity, you know, that drives it. And I think that's so cool.
You know, you're pushing the limits when even Sean White can't keep up with how many spins you just did in a video. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Sean, for jumping on the show today. I certainly learned a lot about everything from gold medals to how the future of snowboarding looks, and it looks bright. Everyone go check out White Space for sure. It's ski season coming up, and I'm in the need. I have my final question is, I'm a skier. Can skiers wear White Space?
Of course. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's the fun part. I mean, we do a big get together every season, and we have skiers, we have snowboarders, we have people that just hang at the lodge. You know what I mean? Like, that's the whole point. I mean, that the brand was built to be, you know, winter wear. So, you know, I'm in New York City right now, and there's only so much stuff I can pack to get to where I'm going. And I'm like, well, I got to ride in Switzerland, or I got to go to Colorado, but I also am in New York and it's cold. I want something that I can like wear in the city and look normal. It's fashionable, but then it's got the function of like, it can withstand whatever I'm going to throw at it on the mountain. So we make underlayers and all this stuff. And so, yeah, I feel like, you know, if you're somewhere cold or you just want to, you know, a nice coat to go to school or work, yeah, check it out. Whitespacesnow.com.
Whitespace for skiers, snowboarders, and podcasters.
Cold people.
Yeah, podcasters, cold people.
Thank you, Sean.
This was awesome. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thank you both. Till next time.